Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right. Hi.
It's always fun. Well, fun is maybe not the best word, but using this technology, sometimes it's hard to tell when I'm live or not. And so we always have this moment of awkwardness. But welcome everyone to the High Thrive Coaching Podcast. My name is Mark Johnston, and with me, as always, is Heather Choate. And here we like to talk about marriage and what makes marriage work and how to do better with your close and personal relationships. This week, just want to run down a little bit what we're talking about. Today, we mentioned this the other time, but we're going to be talking about the elements of a thriving marriage, basically what actually makes a marriage work. We really want to break this down and talk about, you know, those essential elements that really are necessary for any relationship to thrive. We don't always like to just focus in on what's going wrong and how to fix problems. I mean, this is our Facebook group is The Thriving Marriage, right? We want to talk about how you can actually have that happy, amazing, thriving relationship with your spouse. But before we get into all of that, Heather and I, we like to focus in on the positive and what's going well. And so here we have the client win of the week. Heather, who do we have this week?
This was a really fun one. This is from Crystal, and I wouldn't be surprised if she's watching because she's amazing and she'll probably listen to the replay. So this is a huge shout out to you, Crystal. And she says, I'm not sure where I would be. Oh, let me move this over. Sorry, everyone. Okay. I'm not sure where I'd be if I had not found High Thrive Coaching. I started with the relationship reboot and then went on to PATH divorce cure programs. And then she did the one-on-one coaching, and it is amazing. I'm thankful every day for this opportunity. I strive to make the most of the teachings of Heather and Mark and their coaching staff. I have carried many of the concepts into my relationships with my daughters and into my job dealing with parents. I have even passed on the importance of mindset and self-care to everyone I meet. My life has truly been transformed. So really good work, Crystal. I know you've been applying the principles that Mark and I teach. You're doing the work, and it's definitely, definitely paying off.
Yeah, and so usually we try to find some win that applies to the topic this week. And Crystal has, you know, real, like Heather was talking about, and like she was talking about, she's really applying these principles to get to a point where she feels happy with herself. It's always a pleasure to talk with Crystal, and I'm glad that we were able to highlight one of her wins here. So I really actually just wanted to get right into the content because I actually really like this topic. I personally so much rather focus in on what makes people happy, what makes people do well, what makes people thrive, rather than sit and dwell on, okay, why are things going wrong and why aren't things going well, and you know, all the problems. It's so much more enjoyable when you say so. So I actually just want to start off because, you know, I don't want to make people think that, you know, myself or Heather, our own personal relationships with our spouses are, you know, like we're something exceptional. But you know what? I actually think that Jen and I do pretty well. So I actually just wanted to start off just talking about that a little bit, like what makes our own personal relationship work. And then we can kind of get into like the nuts and bolts of it. But maybe, Heather, what do you think in terms of, because, you know, I see you and Ben, and I recognize that you guys, you seem really happy together. Why do you think that is? What makes your relationship work?
I love this topic, and I was really happy because Mark, you actually were the one that chose it. And I saw this very first kind of bullet point on our outline. And so I spent my lunch break thinking about it. So while I'm sitting there eating my kale salad and the baby's throwing yogurt, I'm contemplating what makes our marriage so great. And by no means are we perfect. And I know that Mark and I both shared some of the struggles that we've gone through in our relationships. However, I do know that there are certain elements that really bring a couple together, and being able to learn those and apply those has been truly life-changing. You know, just a few years ago, I was at a point where our marriage, we were even talking about separation or divorce. That was the lowest point of our marriage. And I've shared that with you guys. And so coming from that state, maybe where you are as you're listening to this, to a state now where I truly believe our marriage does thrive. The statistics say that 50% of marriages end in divorce, and that only, here's the one that most people don't know, only 16% say that their marriage is happy. So if you think about the majority of people out there, there are very few people that have a happy marriage. And I was thinking about what our journey has been as a couple with Ben and I, and the things that really stood out the most to me, and I did not cheat, Mark. I did not cheat here. I just want to preface this. I did not look at the rest of this outline, but it's amazing because it's actually in complete harmony with what we're going to share with you today, which just, it gave me chills when I saw that. So I didn't cheat, and I was thinking about it, and I wrote down these just two simple things, okay? Understanding each other's core needs, understanding Ben and I emotional needs, okay, and working together as a team to meet those needs. And we'll go into this later, but Ben and I actually have what you would probably consider polar opposite needs, and they often clash. And if we didn't understand that, we could very often feel threatened by each other's needs. and it can cause a lot of chaos. And it did for years until I finally understood his needs, and he finally understood what my needs were. And then we can work together on that. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that we reward vulnerability. We really reward each other when we are open, when sharing our feelings, with sharing some of our troubles, with sharing some of our dissatisfaction with something that happened in our relationship. We're at a state now where instead of that feeling threatening to us and shutting down or closing off or escalating things, you know, being very volatile, we actually really reward any of that vulnerability. And we have open communication so that now, instead of a cycle of things building up to the point where I felt like I had to blow up to be able to resolve the issues, I think I shared that last week. Now we're at a state where I can see that, things are starting to build up even just a small amount. And we have a game plan in place on how to deal with that, so we don't have to go through that really negative, unhealthy cycle that we were in for years. So those two things. It's understanding each other's core emotional needs, so we'll get into that, and working together to meet those, and then rewarding vulnerability has created an incredible amount of closeness and safety and connection that I absolutely crave, and I love it. It's beautiful. As the years go by, Ben and I fall more and more in love with each other.
And so I find it interesting that you know, you're hitting on very similar points that I was thinking of when I was thinking about my relationship with Jen. And, you know, Heather and I, when we do these podcasts, we just have some talking points and bullet points here. And the first one that I put here was just this phrase, I love you and I like you, which I found amusing because Jen and I, we've been watching, I don't know if any of you guys have watched the show Parks and Rec. I know it's been over for a little bit. But Jen and I are actually going through it for the first time. And I was just kind of shocked because Jen and I have been saying this to each other for a long time. We've been saying, you know what, in those really deep moments, instead of saying, looking at each other and saying, I love you. That's always assumed. We will tell each other, I really like you right now. And it means something a little bit deeper. But we're watching that show, Parks and Rec. And I almost felt like they stole our line because two of the main characters were that became like their little catchphrase. And I was like, wait, that's the thing that I'm saying to Jen. But it was very similar to what Heather was talking about in that, you know, there are many moments where I feel like Jen and I really get each other and are there for each other, that we are focused in on meeting each other's needs. I mentioned to Jen, I'm about to have about 5-6 hours straight of meetings with clients and things like this, like the podcast. And I said, my throat was starting to hurt a little bit. She's like, oh, you know, I would love to take care of you. She said, I'm going to go fix some tea while you're doing the podcast. I'll bring it up to you sometime. And I didn't ask her. It's just, she was in tune with what I'm looking for. And it just feels good that she is focusing in on what I need. And I do the same thing for her. But that idea that we understand what each other needs and we want to give that to each other is a huge part of the relationship, just like what Heather was talking about with Ben. And then beyond that, you know, I know that whatever I say to her, that Jen is going to support me no matter what. And I really do think that these points, and it's interesting, like I came up with these points independently of Heather. I came up with these points independently of the rest of the outline. I said, well, this is what happens with Jen and I. And then I kind of created, you know, an outline of like, okay, what is a relationship in general need? But it hits those points still. And I find that interesting that Heather, both you and I, even before we really came up with the meat of the topic, we kind of came to the same conclusions here. So
this comment real quick that we got here in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group, I will have that one day at a time.
Oh, of course. Awesome.
And you absolutely can.
So,
let's go into what the emotional needs are.
Yeah, this is the thing. This is what I think actually creates an enjoyable relationship. And, you know, like Heather is talking about, it's like I mentioned here, I think it's about needs. I think this is, at least to me, is the easiest way to explain why someone might be happy or not in a relationship. I like to give credit where credit is due. This is at least the idea of basic emotional needs, at least these categories, comes from a woman named, her name is Chloe Madonis. I took it from her and then applied it to relationships. And I think it fits really well. But essentially, there are 6 basic emotional needs. If you've been listening to our material for some time, you've probably heard us talk about this. But these are needs like for connection and belonging. Is one, you know, just a sense that you can connect, it's okay, you belong together. A need for security, trust, comfort, and certainty. And I find that this one right here is really in danger when, as couples start to pull apart, or as divorce starts being brought up as a possibility, and people react poorly. Or needs for variety, fun, challenge, you know, just that silliness, that flirtiness that a lot of couples have when they're first together. Needs for respect and importance and value, feeling like you matter. And then also needs for growth and contribution. The thing is, what we've noticed, Heather and I, is the more of these needs that are met within a relationship, you know, if you can get, you know, 3 or 4 of these needs met really consistently well, people have a hard time letting that relationship go. It feels good to be in that relationship. And if you have, you know, even 5 or all 6 needs, you know, doing well, you probably have a very happy, content person. And it's only when some of these needs are blocked consistently or really drained consistently that people tend to scramble for some way to get that need met. And you get into the situations that I think many of you are experiencing right now. I don't know, Heather. We've been talking here about how much our own marriages mean to each of us. Would you say that Ben is really supportive of these needs in your life, of meeting these needs, or is it something else? Do you think it's this, or is it something else that really makes it enjoyable and a pleasure to be with Ben?
Oh, it's absolutely this. And if I can share a little bit, just what it looks like, because at first, like I said, our needs were at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. So for me, my strongest emotional need is growth. I love growing. If I'm not growing, I feel like I'm not progressing. And then I get anxious and I get depressed. And I feel like I'm just not living the way I'm supposed to. So I have a huge, maybe an abnormal need to continually be challenged and growing. And so I'll take on, you know, building a business like this. I'll take on health challenges. I take on reading challenges and spiritual challenges. I love growth. And Ben's core emotional need is security. And so there have been times where my need for growth threatens his need for security. And he says, whoa, 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 like slow down. Like, I don't know if that's the right thing to do. And, you know, even financially, like we know that finances has a lot to do with couples pulling apart or being really strong, is that there's can be a lot of contention around finances. And so I look at money as a means to grow. I want to see it invested. I want to see it creating more abundance for us. But he often sees money as security. Like, it's just an example that's kind of maybe more tangible. And he wants to save money. And so my desire to invest money and grow it is very risky to his security, right? And so if we're not understanding of each other's needs, then we can get in each other's way and we can start to take it really personal. Like, I can't believe you would do that. And until we understood where each of us was coming from, then we were constantly in conflict about different things, because he would say, you know, hold on, let's do this. No, that doesn't feel right. You know, no, I think we should save the money. And that felt threatening to my need to grow. So both of our needs were essentially threatening each other.
I've noticed the very similar things with I can't think of any exceptions to this with the people that we work with, but almost invariably when there are problems, it's because each are trying to pull on a need that kind of pulls on their partner's need, like it pulls away from their partner's need. Like you were saying with Ben, your need for growth against his need for security. Or, you know, some people are looking for that connection. And so they cling on to their relationship maybe a little bit too hard, and the other person feels like they can't have their own opinion matter, or they can't feel heard, they can't have some of that freedom, that need. And some there's a lot of these pushes and pulls on needs that I think are really at the root of a lot of the problematic patterns in a lot of the relationships that we try to help.
Yeah, it can create some very challenging and unhealthy cycles. What tends to happen, and we face this ourselves, was that if you don't meet my need, well, then I'm not going to meet your need. And so then when, like, Ben would reach out for physical affection and yet he hadn't met my need for growth and significance, I was less likely to want to provide that. And then that made him feel rejected, right? Because even, I'm not just talking about sexual intimacy, although that's part of it, but just, you know, physical intimacy in and of itself. I didn't want to hug. I didn't want to snuggle on the couch because I'm like, well, you're not listening to me. You're not giving me, you know, you're not connecting with me. And so then he would feel rejected. And then that would make him less likely to then want to meet my need for emotional connection. And so it just, I see this pattern over and over, and I know you do too, that when we don't meet each other's needs, then we tend to withdraw from meeting their needs, and then they withdraw from meeting our needs, and it creates a really negative cycle. But the same is true of the positive side. And that's where Mark and I were talking about, like, now we have a desire to meet each other's needs, and it's really rewarding and it's really fun and incredibly satisfying. So wherever you are on that spectrum, whether you're in the cycle of pulling away and not meeting each other's needs, or maybe you're in the cycle of we are meeting each other's needs, it's really, really fun. You always have a choice and you always can start to turn the tide one way or the other.
Yeah, it becomes a self-feeding loop no matter what end of the spectrum you're in on. And so it almost sounds like you're saying whatever you really put into the situation, you're much more likely to get that out of it.
Absolutely.
So this is, you know, essentially what creates an enjoyable, stable relationship is when, especially when both partners can really put into those needs. And it almost sounds like you're saying, you know, you can make some shifts by putting, you know, trying to meet your partner's needs on your own, hoping that you can get some of that out of it as well.
That's right. Quick comment here. How do you figure out your essential element or essential need, as I think what the question is. And if you are a member of our newsletter, then we have a resource that can help you identify what your core emotional need is and your partner's as well. So I will send that to everyone that's in our newsletter. If you haven't joined our newsletter yet, then go to thrivingmarriagepodcast.com/newsletter and you can join and get that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think it's necessarily Just a matter of checking some boxes, though, because I think there's a certain depth to relationships. So, for instance, you might be able to get out and have a date. And this is where I think some remedies miss the mark. And they say, well, you're not connecting very well. Why don't you get out on a date? And it doesn't quite get there. And so I do think that if you're going to have a really successful, happy relationship, that we're not just meeting the needs, like checking the boxes. We need to increase the depth if we're really to have that truly satisfying relationship. I mean, I personally feel like my relationship is very, very deep with Jen. I can talk to her about anything. And that's one of the enjoyable parts about it. What makes it feel so secure? What makes it feel so connecting? I want to point this out. It's not just the needs, it's the depth here. And I want to talk about that for a second. You know, like, how do you actually, what makes a relationship have that depth? I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, Heather?
I do. I really do. This brings to mind the three levels of love. I'm going to go through them really fast because I know you're all very intelligent and you can pick up on this quickly. The three levels of love, okay? The first level is the infatuation stage. This is when I'm love you for the way you make me feel. I'm head over heels in love. And this is where most relationships start. It's that feeling of being on cloud nine. You make me feel so significant. I love being around you. It's kind of a selfish form of love, okay? And one of the big traps is that sometimes, stereotypically, I'm going to say women, but men too, think that that kind of feeling is supposed to last the entire relationship. However, it's kind of surface level and it's kind of selfish if you really think about it. The next level is contractual, and that's the give and take. I will do this for you if you do this for me. And this is where most marriages reside. Like, the majority of marriages land here. And this is where a lot of the problems also come up. Because like I said, if they're not meeting my needs, well, then I'm not going to meet your needs. And it's a constant check and balances. Are they doing as much as me? Do they love me as much as me? Did they give me as much? Are they helping as much with the kids? Are they helping as much with the finances, right? It is this constant checks and balances to see if everything's equal. And it's very contractual. It's like an agreement. Okay. Does this resonate? Like, I hope that this makes sense, because this is where so many marriages are.
Oh, so many times we hear this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so then when it's not working, then we say, oh, it's not working. You must not love me. This contract of a relationship must be broken. It must be over. Right. And so even here, as Mark and I are talking about meeting needs, this is a little bit in that zone, and it can work. It absolutely can work with teamwork and with effort and with good communication and all the powerful skills that we teach you. And it's beautiful, and it can be a very rewarding and fulfilling thing. The opposite side is exhausting, and it's painful, and it's not fun to be in, okay? No one wants a business agreement for a relationship, right? No, and then that brings us to the next level of love, which is unconditional love. This is the kind of love that says, I love you no matter what you do. I love you if you meet my needs. I love you if you don't. I just love you for who you are. You don't need to change or be anything different. And that level of love is, I would say, the highest. It's level three. It's the highest level of love. But most relationships have a mix of all three. And actually, a relationship, I would say, that's really healthy probably has a really good, healthy mix of all three. We have that infatuation. We have that kind of puppy love feeling. We have that romance and that spark and that intimacy, right? That's in the first stage. And then we have the give and the take. We meet each other's needs. We work together as communication. We solve problems together as a team. But then the highest level that we all really aspire to, and maybe some of you are like, it sounds like a fairy tale. I don't even know if that's real, but I've been the recipient of it. My husband himself has shown me unconditional love when I did not deserve it. He showed me forgiveness and compassion, and he showed me love that had no bounds. And it wasn't on this. I had a very narrow definition of what love was, and that it was very much based within that I needed to be this, this, and this to deserve love. And he loved me even when I wasn't this, this, and this, right? Even when I wasn't X, Y, and Z, Ben loved me anyway. And so that showed me the power of unconditional love. And that, I think, Mark, is what you're talking about as far as the depth that's really behind this.
Yeah.
It's the original unselfish kind of love.
Yeah. Right there. I can almost, you know, I can't see the comments here on my end for some reason, but I can almost predict some people reacting to this. Like, okay, unconditional love, that's great. But what happens if my partner is really causing some damage or really causing some pain here? I mean, do you still offer that unconditional love? And that's a really tricky situation. And I think that really depends on how you define unconditional love. I mean, Heather, you're talking about how you were in a really low place and Ben still offered you that love. I mean, I've been the recipient of that as well, being in some very low places and having that support from my wife, Jen, has been absolutely amazing. The thing was, though, I think if we're going to talk about unconditional love when there is like some pain, you have to qualify that just a little bit, because at the same time, I feel like what was so great about the support from my wife wasn't that she just let me sit in that pain or let me sit in the damaging behavior that I was engaging in. She was offering love towards me and support, but also holding me accountable and helping push me to be the kind of person that she knew I was.
Oh, I agree.
And I think that's more where we have that ideal unconditional love rather than the unconditional acceptance or unconditional complacency.
Right. I'm really glad you clarified that. So where unconditional love has to come from in order for it to be received is within yourself. And if you say, I love me for who I am worthy, I am good enough, I am good as I am, right? Then you have the self-respect to say, I need healthy boundaries here. And we did a whole entire podcast about healthy boundaries. If the relationship itself is in an unhealthy state, then that's exactly what would be needed, right? If someone's causing you pain, we would bring in the unhealthy boundaries, and you can still love someone and say, I love you, but I don't love what you're doing. And I don't accept what you're doing, and what you're doing is not okay. And this is what we need to now do so that we can heal and get to a healthy state.
So then what do we do to increase the depth there? Because I mean, we kind of explained, okay, there are certain levels of depth. And certainly there's probably many other theories, many other ways that we could explain depth. Just like there's, you know, all sorts of personality theories. We talked about, you know, the needs here, and there's, you know, I can think off the top of my head at least two or three other theories of needs and theories of how relationships work. But so if we're talking about depth, though, how do you actually increase depth? And this was actually something that, and I've said this before, I actually liked thinking about how do relationships actually work? You know, what are the nuts and bolts? How do you mechanically do this? Because, you know, it's my job to be able to explain these things to all of you. And when I got to thinking about this, you know, this is really, when we're talking about depth, it's a matter of intimacy. How close do you feel to your partner? How vulnerable do you feel with your partner? How much do you trust them? And even those words themselves, I don't think are really necessarily adequate to explain every aspect of depth. I do think that there's many different ways that we can be intimate or close or vulnerable with our partner, and different relationships, I think, react differently to different types of intimacy. I know for my wife, Jen, and I, certain areas of our relationship are so much more calm and easy and, you know, safe and trusting. And other areas we need to be a little bit more careful, but, you know, we make efforts in that. So, you know, I'm thinking here, if we, in terms of different areas, I think really important areas would be emotional intimacy, physical or sexual intimacy, even spiritual or intellectual. But we could talk about any number of other categories as well. Like some couples have difficulty being very open and vulnerable in terms of money. I know many couples have separate bank accounts and don't talk to each other about money. Others, maybe that, you know, maybe they're very physical, but they can't share emotions. And maybe other ones that can, you know, maybe they can talk politics or not. You know, maybe politics is something that they don't feel safe or trusting or intimate in. I don't know. You know, this is turns into a really personal sort of discussion. I'm thinking about my own relationship at the moment here, and thinking, okay, where are those points where Jen and I are really extremely open, extremely vulnerable, and where are those other areas that maybe it's a little bit, we're a little bit more hesitant? But I think this is a really important piece of the relationship, is how deep can you get in different areas, and how deep does each partner need to be to feel happy? What do you think, Heather? I mean, is this, am I completely off base here, or is this a key piece in being happy in a relationship and matching those depths?
Oh, Mark, you're making me laugh. You are an international marriage expert, and you've changed thousands of lives and numerous marriages, and you're asking me if you're off the mark. No, you're never off the mark.
Heather, I have to have a way to, I'm just going to pull back the curtain. I have to have a way to engage in the conversation and ask you questions. This is, you know, people I know, I'm not off the mark. No. I know what I'm talking about.
All right. So the connection, right, between intimacy, vulnerability, and trust. And you and I, Mark, both talked about how vulnerability and being able to share anything and nothing's off the table, and how that's, and like in my relationship, that's rewarded. You know, we celebrate and acknowledge each other and reward each other for being vulnerable. And sometimes it's a tough pill to swallow. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes Ben says, hey, when you did that the other day, that hurt, or that upset me, or I felt like maybe you weren't respecting my time, right? Whatever the situation might be. And so instead of getting upset about that or feeling threatened, I've come to a place where I know that that's out of love. And he shares that with me. And we talk about how to frame the conversation, right? Like these ways to approach sensitive topics. But I reward that now. And it doesn't threaten me, because I've done a lot of internal work on myself where those insecurities that used to rule me are no longer dominating. But I can be like, okay, I can see that now. Let me understand your perspective. I'm going to highlight perspective and understanding always. And then I thank him for sharing that. And as we continue to do that little by little and day by day, and conversation by conversation, and sometimes hurdle by hurdle or painful thing by painful thing, that vulnerability creates a lot of connection and intimacy. And we feel safe sharing with each other those things about ourselves or the things about our relationship. Even the most challenging things to share are not off the table. They're rewarded and we feel safe. So that creates that trust.
Yeah, I think it's what you're talking about. There's like a process here in actually building this up. And, you know, after thinking about this for a long time, I mean, there's basically some steps that can actually build up this intimacy, even if you're, no matter where you are in the spectrum in terms of depth. I think there are certain things that are absolutely needed to increase that depth, if that's your aim. And, you know, number one, I don't think you can actually increase the depth or build up intimacy. We keep talking about vulnerability here. I don't think you can build that up unless someone is vulnerable, unless someone makes themselves a little bit unsafe. And I want each of you to think back to when you were dating. If you think about this, wasn't dating just a series of sharing just a little bit more about yourself, sharing a little bit more of who you were personally with that other person, and then being rewarded by it? Even if we're talking about just the very basic physical affection, even down to sexual intimacy there, isn't it just a continuous spectrum of, I'm going to reach out a little bit. I'm going to lean in for this kiss. I'm going to lean in for this hug. I'm going to, you know, really make myself vulnerable here. And then that vulnerability was accepted and understood. And then even further, there was positive feedback. There was acknowledgement. There was recognition of that there. You know, it's weird to think of in these terms, but I can think of my first date with Jen and being a little bit nervous to ask her out. So I wasn't, yeah, I was a little bit shy at that time. But so I made myself vulnerable. I went over and said, hey, you know, would you like to go do this with me? I'd really be interested to go do this. We went out to go see this movie together. And it was a little bit of a vulnerable point there. But she responded. She was excited about it. So it was accepted. And then there was a little bit of positive feedback. Even after the date, she said, you know, that was a lot of fun. I'd like to do something like that again sometime. You know, this is such a small scale of this sort of cycle, but that's, you know, if you're going to increase the depth of the relationship, the intimacy of the relationship, it seems to me it's just the cycle over and over and over again. The vulnerability was made to feel safe, and it was felt good. Like you were saying, you and Ben reward each other for vulnerability. And it's just you're at a deeper level of this than where you were when you first started dating, right? I don't know. I feel like this is not something that everyone really knows or thinks about. They over and over and over again, I hear people say, well, if I'm going to trust you again, I just need time. And I need to be away. And I think that's not really how you actually repair. That's not how you repair intimacy or repair that depth of a relationship. I think that's possibly the wrong direction to go in those cases. Any thoughts on that, Heather?
Yeah, this actually goes along really well with some comments that we have. You know, we are the ICU unit. Oh my goodness, I always say that. ICU, there we go.
IC unit.
I don't know why I do that. Anyway, I need to go back to school or something. Speaking of school, it starts next week. Anyway, so we serve a lot of people where your relationships are really struggling and your spouse is pulling away. They're wanting a divorce. Communication is strained. And so there's comments here like, how do I build emotional intimacy when we're separated? Or how do I do that when they'll barely talk to me? And so that's exactly why we have our PATH method. It's designed to gradually open that up. You have to start step by step and go through each milestone to be able to get to, you know, the deeper levels that we're talking about. But the same principles apply. And so when you ask your spouse, you know, I really would like to understand you. When you say that this other person makes you feel alive, what did you mean? Can you show me what I'd like, just really like to understand where you're coming from. I'd like to better understand you. And then they share and they say, they don't criticize me. They thank me. They give me appreciation, right? And they give you some understanding and they let you see a little bit into their perspective. Then right there, you can say, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate you being open enough to tell me about that. And so even right at the most tense stages of a relationship, again, we're going to want to show that we're being vulnerable first and then reward when they start to open up and thank them and appreciate that. And they say, I acknowledge that you did that. And I hope that we can do that again. It meant a lot to me, you know, different things like that. And it's going to vary based on your specific situation, but those are the overarching principles.
Yeah. So if you guys really want to build up your relationship, there are specific ways to do that. There are ways to increase this depth. You do have to take in mind, though, where your relationship is at and kind of work from there. But my opinion, there's always something that can be done to repair things just a little bit more, to make things a little bit more comfortable. There's always, I feel, something to be done no matter where you are at, whether you are really in love and happy together, there's still more you can do to deepen that love. And or whether you are coming apart and barely able to talk, there's plenty to do at that stage as well. All right, and so unless you have any other comments, Heather, I think we can get to the marriage mythbuster here this week.
Just one more. I need to sneak in.
No, that's why I asked.
Yeah, no, I just feel like this is really needed to be shared, that I just honor those that are willing to show that vulnerability. There is no reward without risk, right? That's the saying. no reward without risk, no risk without reward, right? And so you're putting yourself out there no matter what stage you're in, whether things are really rocky and you're having to maybe swallow some of your pride and swallow some of your fear and say, this is important to me. I want to connect with this person. So I'm going to be vulnerable, even if I've been hurt in the past. So I just want to honor you for being the brave person that would do that, because you, that's how you open up your heart. That's how you allow for them to become open as well. And that it is an act of bravery, and it comes with some risk and it comes with reward. And so I just honor those who are doing that. If a lot of people are in the stage of, it's just kind of plateaued. And that's a lot of marriages, right? They're just kind of plateaued. What's happening is no one's putting forth the risk anymore. If things are so plateaued that you're not really connecting or progressing, then be willing to have that risk. Be willing to open up. Be willing to be vulnerable in a way that you haven't, and you will smash through that plateau. I guarantee it. And you'll start to create some vulnerability, which will bring some more excitement and reward and depth to your relationship. And like Mark said, it applies to all the different levels. So with that, I honor you for making those choices and being brave to take the risk and have vulnerability, because you are someone that's saying, I want love in my life. I want a deep connection, and I'm willing to risk a little bit of my pride or a little bit of my heart to get it. So with that, marriage myth buster. All right. I heard this on the radio the other day of one of my favorite artists. He's kind of a Celtic singer, Celtic rock singer. Anyway, and I know it's a common song. Maybe you've heard it before too, but I really felt like this would be a great myth to bust. Love is sweet when first it's new, but love grows old and dims with time and flees away like morning dew. Take it away, Mark.
You know, I find this interesting because there's this moment in that sticks out in my memory. And actually, my wife mentioned it just the other day. So my wife gets involved with helping me come up with material from time to time. We were talking about attraction and what actually creates an attraction in a relationship. And she brought up this memory it must have made an impression on her as well. But this was probably a couple years after Jen and I were married, and my family, we always have these vacations here. You know, my family would put on these big family vacations. We have a big family. There's a lot of people there. And Jen and I were sitting on the couch. She's basically sitting on my lap, had her legs draped over me. And one of the older, you know, not old, but older members of our family came up and said, oh, that's really nice that you seem to be really happy together. He said, but just so you know, enjoy this while it lasts, because invariably pretty much every relationship, you know, after a time, it ends up being more of a business sort of relationship rather than a romantic one. And I just kind of, it stuck out because I thought about that. And it's like, no, that doesn't make much sense here. But the whole thing is, I mean, here's the song, here's this person who thought, okay, this is just what happens to all relationships. So that idea is definitely out there. And we even see this sort of idea with people in with affairs and infidelity, where they say, well, you know what? I've been in this relationship. It's not working out. So I better try something new. I'll be happier there. So I thought about this old, you know, Jen and I were extremely happy together. You know, I'm happy. I don't mind sharing this, and I'm happy to say, you know, Jen will still sit on my lap. She'll still drape her legs over me in public. And it just feels very nice and comfortable because we really enjoy being around each other. And so it didn't really get, you know, after 14 years of being married, I don't feel like our love has really dimmed at all. So what happened? Why are we still happy together? Why are so many other people, why does their love grow dim? And I do think that it comes back to some idea of these needs. I also think that there's a lot of other factors that come in. Now, I don't know if all of you are aware. Heather mentioned an important statistic earlier, talking about how there's a very low percentage of people who are happy in their marriage. Now, I've seen different statistics on this, but the general consensus is it's interesting. People's happiness tend to dip into the, you know, starting in the 30s, and it continues to go on this low level up until people start to get into their 50s and 60s. And I want to point out what's going on in these situations and what happens in a lot of relationships. As you get into these relationships, and a lot of, you know, after a few years, what happens with many couples is extra responsibilities tend to set in. Kids come, careers start to develop, and there's less ability to focus in on each other unless you're really making a concerted effort. I mean, if we go back to needs, and you're sitting there, you're working 8-9 hours a day, then you have your commute, and then you come home and you have to get dinner prepared, and then there's the kids, and they have a lot of needs. It becomes easy to say, what about me? You know, I need to take care of myself a little bit and set aside your partner. So there's one thing. People get complacent because a lot of extra responsibilities come in, and they have less ability to focus in on their partner. So I think that's one thing that happens. The other thing that happens is, you know, it's once again that complacency. When we're talking about those six needs, that need for variety and fun and challenge and just something new, unless you actually actively keep that part of your relationship alive, you know, that it's hard to keep things really new when you've been together 14, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, unless you are really trying. Jen and I are constantly trying to do new things with each other and explore new things. And this is why I like being around her, is because it's always fun to do something new with her. And we aren't just complacent sitting and doing the same thing. And so we're able to meet each other's needs that way. So just to recap, where the myth comes from: responsibility set in, people have a harder time focusing in on other people when their own needs are not being met because of these extra responsibilities. And then over time, the need for variety does naturally drop as you become more familiar with your partner. So if you're going to bust this myth and not let your love grow old and dim, as the song put it, there needs to be some actual effort, some conscious effort to not get complacent, to meet the needs of the relationship, even though there are other needs that are going on, like needs for kids. Heather, you're now pregnant with your eighth yeah. kid. Yeah, you have seven kids right now, and I bet you probably have some good boundaries set up with the kids so that you can have time with Ben.
Absolutely. Sacred. Yeah.
Yes. Jen and I, we sometimes have, we tell our kids, we're no longer your parents after 8 o'clock, unless the house is burning or you're bleeding from the neck or something like that. So the kids will come around after 8 o'clock, and we'll say, no, we're not your parents right now. Just go, we need to focus in on each other. And like you said, it's kind of a sacred time, so that we can focus in on each other. And so, yeah, if you really don't want this to happen to you, if you want to bust this myth, make sure that you have good boundaries that protect your marriage. Make sure that you are aware of the need for fun and variety and just new things, new experiences in your relationship, even if you've been together for a long time.
Love it. Thank you so much, Mark. So I challenge all of us to not have the perception that our marriages are going to fade and wither away with time, and that they're not going to last. I challenge us to put forth the intention that our marriages are going to get even better over the years, that we are going to be happier and even more in love with each other as the years go by, so that we can be that, you know, cute little 80-year-old couple sitting on a park bench, gazing into each other's eyes with absolute sparks and joy and connection that's born by going through challenges, that's born by meeting the ups and downs of life together as a team and going through the challenges that we face together and becoming better and stronger because of it. That's our challenge. So if you're with me, then you're in the right place, because we're going to get there. So thank you so much, Mark. I did get one question here What can you do when your spouse is completely checked out, lives somewhere else, and only communicates with you when it comes to the kids? That is why we have our PATH method. You know, I just got off the phone with a man just a couple weeks ago, and he's been struggling for 8 months to turn his marriage around. I know that sounds like a lot of you. And just like I did when my marriage was struggling, he tried a lot of things that just didn't work. He tried counseling for 8 months. No results. His wife kept pulling further away. He spent money on a really expensive cruise with her. I would love to go on a cruise. However, the cruise alone didn't fix the deeper issues going on. Went to their pastor. She refused to go. All the while, he still had no clue why his wife was really leaving him. And he continued to just pour more time, more energy, more money into books, into counseling, into programs, into retreats, and all these things that simply weren't solving his problem. And that's where most of us fall into. Most of us fall into a lot of confusion, into a lot of conflicting advice, and we don't have a clear strategy on how to get our spouse back. He talked about how he would stay up late at night, wondering if she was seeing someone else. That question, is she leaving me for someone else? Am I not good enough? Where did I go wrong? How did I lose her? Right? He struggled to concentrate at work. That constant, you know, concern was in the back of his mind, that anxiety about him and his kids and his wife and what would happen to them. And he kept talking about how he was just been hoping and praying that something will work out for them, but he was simply afraid that it was too late. And so as I was talking to him, it just broke my heart. I've heard this story, and Mark, we've heard this story so many times before, and we're hearing it here in the group right now. And so I know that a lot of you people are nodding your heads and they're saying, yeah, that's where I'm at. I am at, you know? And even more than that, it honestly makes me furious. Why? Because I know that all of these strategies, the counselings, even with good intentions, most of them are complete waste of time, and that too many marriages are ending because they're not getting the right help, right? So here's the truth. You don't need to waste years in counseling. You don't need to go to a fancy schmancy cruise and spend all this money. You don't need to do any of those things. And you definitely need to be careful about the advice that you're getting from your friends, even your pastor, and from books, because it's outdated and often contradictory. It leads to a lot of confusion. Mark and I here, we've turned around thousands of marriages. You can see our success stories and the wins of the clients here in the group. And those people were just where you are at one point. And there's certain commonalities in couples everywhere. There's certain things that pull them together and certain things that pull them apart, right? And so we have proven it with our four proven steps that we call our PATH method that helps you to stop divorce and get your spouse back. If you want to know what those are and you want to know how to apply them to your marriage with your specific challenges, then I encourage you to book a free breakthrough call with us over at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And we will show you how we can get you there through our coaching programs. Right now, we only have 6 spots open, and there are about 200, 250,000 people that will get this within the next 24 hours. And they're people just like you trying to save their marriage. So I encourage you to book your call now so you don't miss out. So thank you, Mark. Thank you so much for sharing with us and inspiring us with what the essential elements to a thriving marriage are. Next podcast, we are super excited. We're going to be bringing on a special guest interview with Farron and sharing how he has saved his marriage and worked on himself along the way, applying these exact principles. So you definitely don't want to miss that. Thank you, Mark, and we will see you all next time.
See you around.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.